ORC at Mobile.
KO4CEF, KO4PXB. Yep, going well. Like I said, I'm doing 65 on 385 going toward Columbia, so that's definitely a good day.
Better than what I'll be doing here in a minute. I'm getting ready to jump on 85 north.
Sorry for you, brother. Hopefully it's clear traffic.
Yeah, but I know whenever, right here at 290 for some reason, it's starting to slow down now, so hopefully they'll figure out something they can do with this intersection before long.
Yep, just have, I know pretty much an impossibility right now, but to have the little conveyor belt, you know, roadways where the traffic will just stay running, and if there is an accident, they're automatically moved off to the side, out of people's view, so they don't rubberneck to see what was the accident was about.
Not a bad idea, because everybody wants to do it.
Yep, I wonder how many accidents have been caused by other people rubbernecking watching the first one.
Definitely sure it happens, but there ain't no telling.
Yeah, a couple of months ago, my boss where I work at, there was an accident that he was stopped for on southbound 85, and he looked up and saw the truck barreling at him full speed, and it hit him, and it, of course, the airbags went off and pushed him into another car, so, but he was definitely mentioned that he was surrounded by airbags. There were so many and went off that he had, you know, pretty much just more damage and injuries from the airbags going off than any part of the accident. No, the airbags did go off, but he mentioned because he was also hit from behind and pushed him into another car that all the airbags pretty much went off, that he was surrounded by airbags, and that he had more injuries from the airbags going off than the accident.
Definitely be dangerous. When I was in the fire department, that was one of the first things we do when we came on a wreck, was cut the power cable to the batteries, so hopefully keep the airbags from deploying if they had not already.
Hopefully they did not go off when you disrupt the electrical. I know there was a thing on the internet, for what that's worth, to be very careful when you're connecting a battery, because that charge has been known to set off the airbags before.
You can see that, especially if one of the modules that sense when the car's been hit or rolled over or something, if it's already kind of been jostled or whatnot, and then it gets power surge. It'd definitely be possible. I know there's been people decapitated by them before when they go off.
Yeah, it was about a year ago. One of my friends they still have it, but they ride like the mountain bikes and run into the front of the car with nobody in it, and it set the airbag off, and he was just beyond upset. Yeah, the insurance company mentioned he just probably hit it just right, and because it's, in theory, not supposed to go off unless you hit it above a certain speed, but he said he just must have hit it just right to make it go off.
And the bad part is, the more complicated cars get, the more sensors and computers they have in them to try to figure all that out.
Yeah, computers are getting more and more complicated too, but I'll definitely stick with dealing computers than trying to figure out that headache of dealing with cars and all the little things that just make them tick, and everything relies on everything else to function correctly.
I deal with that every day. I mean, I come back and, you know, somebody tells me I've got a bent pin or a pinched harness or something, and it caused another issue, and they got to track it down. It'd be such a pain in the butt.
It was this way many years ago. The M1 tank has an override switch for the taillight, because if the taillights and the brake lights are out, it will actually not let the it would not let the tank start until they use that override, which is the stupidest thing in the world to have well over a million dollar tank disabled by the brake lights not working.
And I don't even think I've ever realized they had brake lights on them.
Oh yeah, when the tank's in just normal daylight operation mode, they have brake lights on it. And they even have brake lights when they're in blackout drive, but it's a very small little light that will come on, but you have to be very close to see it. That way it's pretty much a run-up on light, so if it's stopped and you finally get close enough, you realize that that brake light's on for that tank or any kind of vehicle has the blackout drive brake light on.
I never knew that.
That's why the smartest thing that they finally started doing with any kind of night operations, the driver and the gunner, and if it's possible, the vehicle commander will have night vision goggles on, because when it's pitch dark out there, it's pretty much hard to see a vehicle that's pretty much stopped right in front of you, especially if it's dusty.
Yeah, that's like.
Yeah, it's definitely a hair-raising experience, and it'll definitely make you pucker to that seat when you realize there's a vehicle in front of you that you're hit the brakes that quick.
You already bad the car, much less the tank.
Yep. I've watched some of the, when they used that, they pretty much had the M60 tank, and the tank trailing pretty much was very icy, and the hit the brakes a little bit too hard, it sent that M60 tank in just a pretty much, they was doing donuts as it was, you know, sliding off into the ditch, and once it stopped, they just gained control of it again and just pulled right out. But literally, it was just doing circles on the ice, not able to be controlled.
Something you think about when you see a tank losing control and, not even being able to drive on ice, but at the end of the day, pretty much everything has a hard time getting traction on ice.
Yes, it does.
I've not seen anything like that. I might have to look that up on YouTube.
You can also probably watch and Google it or watch it on YouTube where the tanks or any kind of vehicle is actually doing forging operations, and the flotation system doesn't respond correctly, and it will it'll just go underwater, and then you'll eventually see the people pop out going, and the tank's underwater, and they of course have to recover it, and they'll send divers out there with a winching system that the military has that I think it weighs well over 200 some tons, and it will sit there and just recover that vehicle. But of course, if it's buried up to the track in mud, then it's 4-to-1 pulling ratio. But if it's completely submerged in water, you definitely know it's going to take a lot of snatch blocks and extra pulling power just to get that vehicle out of there to where it can start draining.
It'll be definitely a heck of a winch.
The main winch on it with one snatch block, without a snatch block, it can pull and recover 90 tons.
Heck of a winch.
Yep, and then you get the mechanical advantage all into play. It's definitely a lot more than that.
And I guarantee they need every bit of it.
Yep, when I was on the recovery vehicles as a commander, any part of the crew that actually got it stuck, they were the ones that got the end of the cable, and they had to trace all through the mud and connect them. And, of course, we always did it in a scissor mode. That way it pulled evenly instead of one cable. And we always had the soldiers stand far, far away from the cables if they ever snapped, and we've seen them snap before, and we're, of course, we're buttoned up inside that recovery vehicle when we got the winch going, but there's nobody even in that recovery cable.
Thanks, Snaps. It's going to cut somebody in half.
Yes, sir. Then you got that vehicle loose again, that there's no telling, you know, if it's just pretty much straight line where it's going to roll back into where it was stuck, or if not, then it's a good distance. Now you've got it free-floating again.
Job in the military, y'all did recovery work for other vehicles, or what?
That's what, you know, we did recovery for other vehicles that was either overturned, you know, needed to be lifted up to change the tire, because when we found it, it was easier just to do that, when, especially in combat operations, just to sit there and use that vehicle to lift that vehicle up, change the tire, even use the pneumatic system on it to change that tire. You know, we could get that vehicle, the tire changed out within like 14 or 15 minutes, because it'll have a spare. You put that new spare on there, you fix that other one when you're back in non-hostile waters.
It takes time to change the tire when you're out about a meter or you get shot at or whatever.
Yeah, when I was doing convoy operations and part of the recovery, a sniper shot a hole in the rim of the tire, and since it was on a civilian truck, I told through an interpreter for somebody to go down there and find a spare tire to put on this vehicle so we can get out of that area, because they mentioned recovery was 4 hours away, and it was already in the heat of the day. And when I called and told, and I told them through the interpreter, I said, we can be out of here in 30 minutes compared to sitting on the roadside where we're already, you know, there's a shooter in the area. So find a spare tire, get this thing put on, let's get out of here. And unknowing to me, because they used to do that, they would give that person a new spare tire when they had that situation at the recovery yard, and they did not do that anymore. So that guy tried to find me, and he did find me and tell me that, and then I talked to the recovery manager in the in that vehicle yard. He goes, yeah, we don't do that anymore. I'm going, okay. So that guy was just, you know, out of a rim of a tire, and that was not my problem.
And that, but you gotta do what you gotta do.
All right, sir. So I am now in the driveway. Please have a great day. I'll be clear on your final. It's KO4PXB.
Good one, and your name's Lloyd, right, if I remember correctly?
Yes, sir, it is. Thank you.
Good evening. I appreciate you keeping me company on my ride home, so you have a good evening. KO4CF, and I'll be clear. 7-3.